Should you take five?
Yeah.
I'm Allie Grant.
And I'm Jess Yu.
Welcome to Follow Me, your resource for all things influencer.
Brought to you by Be Social Group.
Now, let's see who we're following this week.
You should diversify your skill set, mm-hmm. and the backbone is your experience and your education. So in addition to like what you do on like social, you should also have a viable business in the education and the experience behind that, mm-hmm. to back it up.
Hey guys, welcome to the Follow Me podcast, your resource for all things influencer marketing. Allie here. Jess is not going to be on the intro, but she is on the rest of the podcast. Today, we are so excited to chat with Kenya Claiborne. Kenya Claiborne is an award-winning influencer and content creator and the founder and editor-in-chief of Style and Society magazine. She oversees the core magazine and digital across all platforms. A style influencer, TV host, entrepreneur, media maven, and lifestyle expert with a major passion for all things communications, she launched the Los Angeles-based online publication as a platform to celebrate the best of entertainment, fashion, lifestyle, travel, foods, and red carpets globally. I really love this episode. We kind of just like literally hit record and started chatting, mostly about her kind of navigating finding a manager or working with an agent and switching teams and figuring out kind of what makes sense for her as a content creator. And she just asked a lot of like questions actually to Jess and I about how do we do talent management? What does it mean to even have a manager? How can a manager help me as a creator? It was interesting. I almost felt like I was being interviewed, which makes so much sense because Kenya is obviously an editor-in-chief and she runs a magazine, so she's used to being the interviewer. So it was a really good episode, and I feel like at the end we sort of like unpacked what makes sense for Kenya and like where she's going with her career. But certainly an interesting episode if you're a creator wanting to learn about what managers do, what it's like being an influencer, running a magazine, and kind of the way she's evolved her career from going to like super corporate to being a creator. So anyways, let's get into the episode. Yeah. I think agent versus manager is like a huge question. It kind of just like depends on, you said like big commercial shoots, like that's maybe more of an agent. And then a manager in this space is like more 360. So like for our clients, what we do is the most of it is brand partnerships on social media. So we're doing deals with like L'Oreal and Maybelline and all these brands on their social, like 90% of what we do is there. But then we're looking at like 360 for the talent in terms of like, how do they grow? Like, how do they get more awareness? How do they keep accelerating their career beyond social media, right? Because if like TikTok is gone tomorrow, like, you know, what happens? So that's like building their own brand, which you have in your magazine, or like product and things like that, or linking them up with like a book agent or a TV agent, things like that. So we're like really in their whole entire business. Mm-hmm. And an agent is a little bit more like focused, I'd say.
So. And I also think too, I think agents sometimes come to us, traditional agents, in the sense of like commercial and acting and hosting, because they don't understand the social and digital space. But I think to Ali's point, what are you looking for? Are you looking for someone to be immersed in all of your business or be really focused on one aspect of your career that you want to grow or you want to extend out to?
Yeah. I mean, with my former agency, you know, I was assigned to them for about 3 years. And, you know, any like third party partnerships are brand deals that I managed myself. And so they didn't take a commission out. Mm. It's something that I completely pitched myself for and handled the contract and negotiation, all that for like third party deals. And then, you know, they did it for, you know, everything else that was outside of like a, you know, all the third party platforms that exist today. And I know like when the pandemic hit in 2020, those platforms substantially grew. So there's like hundreds and hundreds of those that exist now. But
like Captivate and Four and things like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
So they wouldn't touch those things.
No. Okay. So like, you know, for instance, like Popular Pays, for instance, you know, going on to those types of sites on a daily basis, looking at the opportunities, pitching for those types of opportunities is something that I traditionally always did myself. Now, I'm not saying that I wouldn't be opposed to a management agency, you know, doing that, but that alone is a big undertaking. You know what I mean? Because like, you have to go on, like, then there's just so many out there and so many new ones that are always popping up. So to kind of be on the cusp of that and having the time and the bandwidth to be able to like identify all of those opportunities is a big undertaking.
I think too, you really have to make sure that like your management team or agent, whoever you choose, is like bringing stuff to the table that you aren't already getting. You have like a full-fledged brand, social media following, good engagement. You're probably already getting brand deals coming your way, right? Like you just said. So it's like, what are they bringing outside of that? And we always say, as the pie gets bigger, the pieces that are being taken out, the commission doesn't hurt as much because the pie is like larger and larger because that team is helping you build it.
Totally.
Make it and bake it.
I also think too, like, you know, inbound deals and partnerships, that shows market interest. And I think that's really important too. Like when we're recruiting new talent, it's always important to have inbound. But like Ali said, in addition to that, there should be outbound to like capitalize on that market interest. But I think having a healthy market interest is like a key factor in like, oh, I'm relevant. You know, brands want me. These types of brands want me. So how is my management going to come in and not only capitalize on that and like sustain those relationships, but how can we tap into management networks and like other networks with similar brands and agencies that like maybe don't know your profile and you yet?
I mean, I think like ultimately is you always want to continue to elevate, right? And build upon like what you've already have done. And I think for me, you know, I think when I first signed on to my management agency, you know, there was a sense of aggressiveness and like, you know, going out there and actively pitching and like, you know, bringing like all of these great opportunities to the table beyond what I would have been able to acquire on my own. But I think just kind of like over the span of some years, you could get to a point where you outgrow your agency, right?
That's such a thing. We were talking about that today, actually. It's such a thing. Or outgrow the person you were working with and they might be doing the same, you know? So that's a, I mean, 3 years is like a good amount of time to be with a company. I feel like that's sort of that, like, also like it happens in like a job, like you've been there for 3 years and you're kind of like itching for a change. So I feel like that's a good amount of time.
And it's like a sweet spot.
3 to 5 years. But I think once you find someone, obviously like the jumping around, I think really hurts creators when they like, oh, I'll try it with this agency for a couple months and this agency. Then it's like the marketplace gets confused on like, where are they repped and how do we like outreach to them? So find someone and like stick to them this next round. But what are things you want to achieve like as a creator and kind of where you're at now and where you want to go?
You know, I guess I'll start back by introducing myself. I'm Kenya Claiborne. I'm the founder, editor-in-chief of Style and Society magazine. I'm also a, you know, style influencer and a content creator. I launched Style and Society magazine a little over 10 years ago. My background, like I started out my career actually working in radio, then went from radio to TV news and then print with the LA Business Journal. And then I actually had the itch for getting out of the media side and actually more into like the PR side of things. And so on that front, I worked for a lot of like big agencies in-house and, you know, just directly with the brand, but for like Honda and IKEA and like all of these big brands. In fact, I used to work right across the street at an agency called the Rogers Group, which was at the time it was like one of the largest independent PR agencies.
Is that Rogers and Cowan now?
They, yeah, there's a relationship.
Okay, yeah, I think they probably merged. I think they're in this office now still. That's funny.
I used to work like right across the street and my client was Honda. And, you know, I launched like the Honda Jet and like a lot of the diversity programs and, you know, just kind of across the board. And then, you know, worked for IKEA, North America, managing the corporate affairs and communications. Went to go work with Jack Specific, which at the time was like the third largest toy company in the country. And then my last corporate job I was at for almost 10 years and I was managing public affairs for a mass transit project. And I worked for an architectural design engineering firm. And, you know, just like a year into the job, you know, I wasn't feeling fully fulfilled in the job. Like I was great at what I did, lots of experience, but the job wasn't sexy. My love for fashion and my love for travel and my love for food and all of this stuff, like it wasn't fulfilling that Mm-hmm. You know, it was a void. And so just as a creative outlet, I started Style and Society. It was just a creative outlet for me to be able to share some of the things that I loved with the world. And the name Style represents more than fashion. Style is lifestyle. And then society is how we all connect through food, like through travel, through entertainment, through all these things. And so it was really the merger of all of those things really coming together and what that looked like. Now, also because I had all this experience working on the media side, you know, print, TV, news, and radio, as a woman of color, I've seen and experienced the lack of diversity or just being misrepresented in media when it comes to people of color. And so, you know, I wanted to change that. And so, you know, really Style and Society really also celebrates diversity. So when I launched the magazine, it was really just a creative outlet. And this was before content creators and like, you know, the Instagrams and like all of that stuff. And so I was already creating content. So when the influencer world kind of, you know, really blossomed, it was like I was already creating content. So kind of that transition was just really organic for me. You know, so basically I did two things. So I had a full-time job, my corporate job, and then I had like this magazine. Now at the time that I had the magazine, you know, I was almost living like a double life because I was like, I had this corporate job that I was going to every day. And then I had, you know, I was on the red carpet. I was like traveling all over the world on all these like glamorous trips and like working with all these like cool brands and things like that. And I think like one of the turning points for me, like my first like really, really big campaign that I got was with Macy's. And it was like a full circle moment because, you know, this campaign was the largest campaign that I had had to date financially. It was working for Macy's, which was my very first job in high school when I was 15 and a half and the worker's permit was Macy's Women's Shoes. So
funny.
The brand was Macy's. It was benefiting. It was an event that was benefiting the American Cancer Society, which was my first job that brought me to LA after college. I worked for an event called Making Strides, and it was like a walk-a-thon to raise money for like cancer research. And so, you know, it was that part. And then it was Simone Simmons, who's LL Cool J's wife. She has a jewelry company that sold at Macy's. And so proceeds from the sales of her jewelry line went back towards the nonprofit. So anyway, it was just this whole like...
It's like you manifested it, but a full circle moment for yourself.
Yeah. And it was a full circle moment for myself. And I was like, oh, maybe I can actually like do this like as a career.
How much did that first job pay you?
That was $3,000.
And how many years ago was that?
This was 8 years. Oh, wow.
So that was probably like, oh my God, this is like a lot of money for like my side hustle. You're probably freaking out.
And it was like, the job was going to an event.
You're like, this is my
job.
You're like, I'm getting paid to do this.
With LL Cool J and Simone. You know what I mean? Benefiting a nonprofit. It was like, this is what I would have done anyway. You know what I mean?
We don't tell them that though.
But it's like to do what you love and to do what you would already do anyway, like getting paid is just like the icing on the cake. And so like for me, that was kind of like really my aha moment. Now I'm a Libra and I'm not a risk taker. And I never had like a mentor that was like an entrepreneur or someone that I looked up to. Like my mom was a teacher and my dad was in the military. And so I've always just grown up, you know, you go to college, you get good grades, you know, you get a good job, you know, and then you retire. Like that's your whole life plan in front of you. So the idea of entrepreneurship was just nothing that was even like within reach for me. But as this influencer marketing world continued to grow, because I was already working with brands across food and fashion, entertainment and lifestyle and beauty, as an influencer, I continue to work across all those brands, whereas a lot of influencers kind of have like a niche where they just kind of work in like one category or one silo. And really, you know, the whole gist of Style and Society was about all of those different silos really coming together. So that really is reflective, I think, in the content that I create. And it's a lot of crossover. So from day to day, I could be anywhere doing anything, working with anyone. And I've been able to work with top brands across everything, every single category across the board, which is really a blessing. And, you know, just kind of like going back of how I transitioned. Now, I didn't want to leave my corporate job. I was making a six-figure salary. I was very comfortable.
401k.
Oh, yeah.
Benefits.
Yeah.
That's the good thing about a corporate job.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And then, you know, to be honest, like when you make a salary, it's like, if you're making a salary, it's like you're getting a certain amount every year, whether you're working or not.
It's also like, if the building burns down, it's not on you. You'll still get your salary, probably. Mm-hmm. But if it's you're like an entrepreneur, you're your own company or your own brand, it's like, no, like I'm building the bricks here. Mm-hmm. I'm the producer, the editor, the worker bee, everything.
Right. Yeah. It's really on you. And, you know, but the thing is, I mean, yeah, I could have stayed there and continue to be comfortable and continue to make a lot of money and not have been challenged, but I wanted something more. And although I look like a millennial, I'm not.
Well, how old are you?
How old do I look? How old
that
do I look?
Always,
if you were
that is not
guess,
like a good, I don't know. I thought you were like.
How
like,
old do I look like, honestly? If you just saw like, me walking in the room.
Like early 30s.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm 42. Mm. So I'm 42.
Drop the skincare routine.
Wait, that's crazy.
Yeah,
I mean, because you were saying something about like 10 years. Like, we were going through your timeline, and I was like, wait a second. Like,
yeah. Well, first of all, like, black don't crack.
Right? So, like, let's just start
there. Right. So, let's just start there. But, like, yeah, like, most people think that I'm like, you know, like late 20s or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is
wow, you were blessed. Blessed beyond.
Oh my God.
Meanwhile, I'm like booking my Botox appointment next week.
But I say that I'm like what you call a zennial. I'm in this age group where it's like, you know, I grew up with having like no technology. I remember we having a typewriter because computers didn't really exist when I was a kid. And getting my first computer, like when I was in college, and my first cell phone when I was in college, you know what I mean? So this idea of, you know, I think millennials today have a sense of like entitlement, and a lot of millennials in the corporate world, they move around a lot, mm-hmm. jump around a lot. The idea of staying with the company for a long time
it's
or retiring
anymore.
With the company,
yeah,
it doesn't,
yeah,
exactly. But I'm not from that generation. But at the same time, I wanted to continue to elevate, you know, my experience. And I asked my job, hey, can I go part-time? Can I work from home? Can I have flexible work hours?
That's
can
a good
I
idea for
telecommute?
Someone
to,
yeah.
Yeah, I brought up all of these ideas. And mind you, this is way before the pandemic. So the idea of working from home
was not a thing.
Yeah, it was like bizarre. Like who works from home? Nobody.
Yeah.
Like who telecommutes? Nobody. Like who has flexible work hours? Nobody. That was just before its time. And, you know, they weren't open to the idea. And so I just quit. And when I quit, it was...
That is so scary, yeah.
Yeah.
Were you freaking out?
Or were you... Did you have, like, a set revenue stream already coming in from content?
So at that point, like, I was already, you know, making, you know, pretty good money just from doing what I loved and just, you know, working with brands and all that stuff already.
Right.
So, yeah, I just stepped fully out of fear and fully into faith. And when I did, it was really the best decision because sometimes I say, you know, you can block your own blessings and you have to be open enough to be able to receive it. So as soon as I was able to leave my job and I made the decision, like that's really when the abundance just really flew in. And so what I was already doing when it came to brand partnerships, all of that stuff just elevated like the moment that I was able to leave.
I also think too, with like, I'm sure the mental capacity, the physical capacity of like going into an office with that no longer being a blockade, you just have so much more creative energy and time and effort in order to put into like your passions, and which obviously X amount turns into revenue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, yeah, I mean, so I left my job and the moment that I did, it was just like, I just knew that it was like the best decision and
no going back
and to be able to do what you love every single day. And I mean, you could see how fast influencer marketing, I also see things from like a 360 perspective because like I used to work in radio, I used to work in TV, I used to work in print. Then I worked in PR for all of these big brands. So it's like when I'm working with a brand on a campaign, I'm not looking at it from like a silo lens. Like I look at it from like a 360 and I understand how the PR and the marketing and the advertising side mm-hmm. and the social media side and all that really fits together.
So how were you making money at this point? Was it mostly partnerships on your social media or on the magazine or in person?
Mostly social. Part of like magazine is more like advertising and it's
got
more
it.
Earned. Yeah, there are sponsored posts and all of that stuff. But Doll in Society, when I started it, it wasn't started as like a blog. It was, you know, an editorial driven publication.
Yeah.
And to be honest, when I first started it, I wasn't in it. So it was like news focused, like content, mm-hmm. right? But what I started hearing in terms of feedback from my followers is they really were interested in me, mm-hmm. you know, like me on the red carpet, like me at the event, like me at this destination and, yeah. and seeing things through my lens and actually seeing me in the content. Mm-hmm. I mean, like I didn't want to be an influencer, quote unquote, right? Yeah. Even, you know, when I started out my career working in radio, like I didn't necessarily want to be in front of the mic or in front of the camera. I wanted to do more of the behind the scenes stuff, which is why I got into PR, mm-hmm. you know, because it was more like of the behind the scenes mm-hmm. thing. But because I was getting all this input from like my followers and they were just very interested in like seeing me, I started putting myself in there more. And now I would say like more there, it's like a little bit of a balance. It's, you know, the editorial, like news-driven content, but then I also incorporate myself into some of the content as mm-hmm. well.
But, and then your personal socials, like it's about you and you're a proper influencer and yes. creator.
Yeah, yeah, I have two socials. I have my own personal, Kenya Claiborne, and I also have a separate one for Style and Society. So like Style and Society is, you know, kind of its own platform, mm-hmm. Has its own social and its own, yeah. you know.
Yeah. And at what point in your career did you decide you needed a manager or a team to help you?
Just when I just got too busy to kind of like manage it all on my own, because it's like I also have a business and I always tell like people that are interested in being an influencer or interested in content creation, I always look at things from a standpoint of like sustainability, right? And like before I started doing this, like I had a long career before I started doing this, right? Whereas a lot of people today, they're just jumping right into it, you know, without going to college or without having any work experience at all. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to say like, what's the evolution of social media and marketing, but it's definitely changing. It's yeah. like, you know, there's all these conversations around AI and what AI looks like, how many jobs are going to be taken away in the future because of AI. And so I always say like, you should diversify your skill set mm-hmm. and the backbone is your experience and your education. So in addition to like what you do on like social, you should also have a viable business in the education and the experience behind that mm-hmm. to back it up. Because if social media went away tomorrow and if influencer marketing went away tomorrow, and we kind of saw like, I think the beginning of this year, you know, we saw the recession, right? Yeah. Like we saw the impact, I think, worldwide, what the impact of the recession was in terms of like a lot of people just getting laid off. A lot of budgets have been scaled back. People are being a little bit more conservative on the spend, like all of that. And so you always just want to have like just something else to fall back on. And, you know, I would always say, don't just keep all of your content on a social media platform, own your content, mm-hmm. you know, have your own platform. You're able to share, you know, that content.
And, like a website
Or, you know, if you want to get into like licensing or, mm-hmm. you know, developing a product or, you know, like whatever that is, but just thinking big picture of like, where do you see yourself in 5 or 10 years, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, there's influencers that come in all different shapes, sizes, ages, everything. But I don't know, in 30 years, are you still going to be doing the same thing? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
I yeah. love that you said that, because I think our number one advice for clients and for influencers, content creators, is you need to diversify your skill set. And you hit it right on the nail, because I also think keeping in pulse, not only in stuff around influencers, but around world news, AI, I think, is going to be such a bigger part of the conversation in terms of social media within the next quarter or two or a year. It's like coming fast. Mm-hmm. All companies are using AI to some sort of capability. So I think understanding what's going on in the world is such an important part in being additive to your business. And like, that's what it is. Being an influencer, if you think about it strategically, it's a business. And I love that you said that. You need to diversify your skill set and make sure that you own your own content mm-hmm. rather than like relying on a Meta or a TikTok or a Google to amplify your voice.
Exactly. I mean, you know, even like earlier this year, I mean, all this conversation about like TikTok, you know, like
going away,
yeah. you know, and if your entire existence lives on TikTok mm-hmm. and, you know, you might have millions of followers or a billion followers on TikTok, but if your entire existence lives on there and it goes away tomorrow,
like how are you going to reach them?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then you, yeah, where does that leave you? So I think not only, you know, diversifying your content on the social media platforms, but just in terms of your skill set. So like for me, like when I first started, a lot of people told me, oh, you need to pick a niche and stay in that niche, like find your niche. Like you can't be doing everything. You can't, you know, and I actually went against the grain and I said, you know, I'm a dynamic woman. I like a lot of different things and I want to share content that I love. And it's not in a silo. It's not just food or it's not just fashion or it's not just travel or entertainment, beauty or wellness. It's really all of that. And it's, for me, it was more about the intersection of all of those different things coming together to tell that story. And I found a lot of success with brands. For instance, I work a lot with automotive, for instance, like just all automotive companies, you know. I have an experience working with automotive. I used to work for Honda, but with working with automotive companies, like if I only did like automotive stuff on social media, then that's all the content and all the brand deals that I would ever get. But, you know, today I could be working on automotive. Tomorrow I could be working with L'Oreal. The next day I could be working with the destination in Bali. The next day I could be working on, you know, something food related for like, you know, like a new restaurant chain or like the pandemic. When the pandemic hit, like a lot of people saw kind of the wrath of the pandemic and to their business. But because I was working on so many different types of brand partnerships, the pandemic didn't impact me in a negative way. It was actually a benefit for me because, you know, the brands that couldn't spend the money, the advertising dollars on a commercial shoot somewhere to shoot that brand, you know, those brands were coming to me to be able to do that content. And it was the content across the board. So really the pandemic for me was like one of the best things that happened because it really just like, again, just elevated everything that I was already doing.
Yeah. I also think too, like we saw so many new creators pop up on during the pandemic, like with TikTok, especially because we were just scrolling on our phones endlessly. But I think a learning that I learned not recently, but during that time was that creators who really just leaned into their interests and wasn't trying to force anything, and that does involve a whole slew of other verticals, really drove like the interest from audiences, honestly. Like, you're right. You are a dynamic woman. Creators are dynamic. You live a full life and it's not just siloed into, oh, I'm a fashion girl. I'm only going to focus on this. The most successful creators are the creators that show these important elements in your life because it's like natural. Like, I love fashion, but I'm also interested in food, health, all the things. So I do agree. Like diversifying your verticals.
And show your passion. Like, you know, you can niche down, like if you have a certain, like if you're really a fashion girly or you're really a beauty girly and you only do like makeup tutorials, that might work for you because it's so clearly your passion and your expertise. But I mean, it sounds like you have many passions, which is nice. Like for me, I've started creating TikToks about creator tips and I'm like freaking loving it. Like I love it because I was like, oh, I want to create something on TikTok. Like what am I good at? What am I an expert in? That's literally the only thing. So
Allie lives, breathes, dies by influencers and the creation world. Like it's crazy.
But like that's an example of like niching down, I guess. But then I don't know. I feel like it works both ways.
I think it depends on who the creator is because I've given both advice. Like you need to not,
I guess I have to.
not to spread yourself so thin because sometimes it's not authentic to be talking about a whole slew of topics that audiences are very savvy. Like they can tell when it's not authentic to you. But I've also given the advice of a beauty creator might want to work on more home decor opportunities. Then you have to showcase that part of your life. And I think that's where the brand, in terms of like paid partnerships, that's where brands are spending money. It's like they want proof in the pudding. Like, are you posting about us organically? And I think that's similar feedback to what we get in terms of like brands working with creators. Brands are so savvy these days. And like creators equally, they need to be able to show what they can show or what they can bring to the table to these brands too. Because there's so many influencers now.
Right. Well, you know, also I think the downside of having a niche that's too small is like, you know, for instance, working with like a beauty brand, right? And there's an exclusivity. It could be a 3 month, 6 month, like whatever it is, right? So if you only do that niche and you can't work with another brand within, you know, skincare, for instance, then that means you can't work. You know what I mean? Like if you're just kind of, if your niche is too small, right?
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. That's why we charge big bucks for the exclusivity. So brands, beware.
Yeah. No, I am like so sick of exclusivity though. Like I just like, it's like, it's not realistic to only post about one lipstick. You know what I mean? Like no one just uses one lipstick. So don't tell a creator to only post about that lipstick. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I try to like whittle it down as much as I can. Like, yeah, 2 hours before and after.
2 hours? Man, Allie drives a hard one. 2 hours?
I'm just like, get rid of it. Like, it's like, you know, you
can't
tell.
I get it from the brand's perspective. Because brands also want the moon, the stars, the shine, the everything.
Yeah.
I get it from their perspective if it's something like a lipstick, you know? Yeah. Like, let's say a creator posts about this lipstick campaign. And then 2 days later, they need to go live with another lipstick campaign. Then like, okay, I get it. But in terms of really big, I mean, we just worked through like a huge exclusivity with, I don't know if we can say, with a big CPG brand.
Mm.
But they kind of included exclusivity in the sense of like all food and beverage. Like that was crazy.
Yeah.
So I think it's like somewhere in the middle, honestly.
And specific, like make sure it's brand specific too and product specific. Like right. don't just say like all household items. Like. No, we're talking about like no Windex and whatever, no Clorox or whatever.
And I think that's the positive going back to like our initial conversation when we first started recording about management. That's on the job of someone who is like your manager and your protector in a sense mm-hmm. of like they are going to go to bat for you so that creators don't have to have these like awkward conversations, I think, because it can get awkward sometimes dealing with the brand directly.
You're basically negotiating like your own job salary every single day. Like, which is like, who likes doing that?
And your own worth in that sense. And then once you get the job, quote unquote, you work through edits, feedback, you know, rounds.
Proving your value and your reach. And it's just like, it's taxing. Mm-hmm. So we need to find you in a management company.
We'll talk offline.
Yeah, we'll
talk offline. So be social, right? So like working in management, what would you say like the percentage is outbound versus incoming?
Ooh, tables have turned.
I would say for me, like I said, there needs to be healthy market interest in order for us to sign anyone in the first place. Because we can't create market interest at the same time. Like managers, we always like to say it's a working partnership at the end of the day. Like we do our due diligence to make sure that we utilize our networks and are continuously pitching that's curated specifically to our talent. For example, let's stick to home decor. If a creator is moving or has like these key life moments where it's very sellable, that's on us to create these curated packages, pitches, whatever it is, dependent on, you know, what the creator is working on or what their life is looking like.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other side, we also need our talent to give us some working room in order to be selling you at this point, because we always say like your socials are your resume. We can pitch brands willy-nilly, but like we need to, again, prove to brands like this is the type of content that she can deliver. This is like the type of elevation. This they can elevate you, the brand, in this way. And I think that's really important too. So I think there's not really like a number, but I would say I always like to say it's a working partnership.
If we had to put a number on it, I would say like in an ideal world, it'd be like 60-40. So 60% is incoming from the influencer and 40% is like what we're able to get outbound. And I think the reason behind that is because when brands and agencies are looking for creators for a partnership, they sometimes just like have someone in mind and there's like no changing their mind. And like they're going out to this influencer for this reason. So that's obviously like a lot will come to your inbox that way. Another thing with like signing with a company like ours, where it's like we're a big team, we get castings that come to us directly. So those are things that would have never come to you because it's an agency or a brand that's like, hey, I need 15 girls to like do this campaign. Who do you rep? Versus like them going to each influencer directly will take way too much time. So I feel like that's why a lot of the influencers who are repped get more deals in the end because of those like circumstances mm-hmm. or situations. And then like the way we work with clients is like you come to us with like a wish list of like, here are my dream brands. This is how I've mentioned them organically. This is how they fit into my content. And then we go after them. And it's like, you know, using our relationships or doing cold pitching. So it's like a mix of things. Mm-hmm. But I would say with like pitching, like I don't know, 50% chance the brand's going to want to do something.
Yeah.
And usually it's like, okay, sure. Like, let's have her come to our next event first. Or can we gift her something and see if she does anything organically with it? So it's like the creator has to help us like make it come to life.
Mm-hmm. And it's also if something's coming from your inbox and you're sending it to your manager saying like, okay, like, can you help curate this? You need to also like trust that your manager is not only doing that and getting the project done, but also making sure that they are working the relationship. So like Ali said, like, are you working on any events? What do you have in the pipeline for Q2, Q3? And making sure that like, let's say after the post goes live, following up with the brand saying like, hey, we loved working with you. What are you working on next? Are you currently casting? So it's always these ongoing conversations that's like a hamster wheel almost. Mm-hmm. So even if it's like an inbound project, it's on the manager to like, yes, execute, invoice, etc. But it's also on them to like make sure that they are representative of your team mm-hmm. and like continuing to like put your name out, plant the seeds in that mm-hmm. sense.
Mm-hmm. Upselling. And then also like the offer coming in, like say the brand comes in at 10K, like never accepting the first offer. So like making sure that goes up to 15K. And then your percentage you're dishing out really doesn't matter because we got more for you in the end, if that makes sense.
So like, so how many of the influencers that are signed also have an agent in addition to the
like a manager?
Not many of ours because we really represent a lot of like social first clients, like digitally native, but we do have a handful of traditional clients. And that's when we kind of stay in our area of social. And then they're more traditional agents kind of step in different areas.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, there's so many agencies now, like the UTAs and ACAAs and like the A3s and like that also have like a digital side mm-hmm. that are just booking campaigns like on the digital front, you yeah. know? But would you work with a UTA or A3 or like a CAA on the digital front? Or would that be a conflict because you guys are both doing digital or would you work together on those?
We can work together. And there is actually an example where I am like quite literally like the manager in the relationship. And one of my clients has an agent at UTA in the digital category. Mm-hmm. And that's like a unique, that's like a, you know, she's a celebrity. She has a really big following and her business is kind of like all across different categories. And I'm sort of really managing every piece of it from like creating a brand with her to helping navigate her social following, all of that stuff. So I'm kind of taking like a bigger role. Yeah. I think like most circumstances that would probably be a bit competitive.
Yeah.
I also think too, as a creator, you need to ask yourself, like, what are you looking for in terms of management? Like, what are your goals with your management team? And what's your working style? And like, what do you expect in terms of this relationship? Because different management companies, there are a ton, obviously. Mm-hmm. Different management companies work different ways. There are management companies that like do the one-offs and are kind of non-exclusive. And then there are companies like us who do mm-hmm. like 360 and like really create like a strategy behind it. Some influencers love that. Some influencers don't. They just want to do like one-off and handle some on their own or whatever. And so I think it's really about asking yourself and understanding like, what are you looking for? And like, what do you expect? And in turn, like, what is the management style like too? I think it's really important to ask of management.
So where can people follow you?
You can follow me on TikTok and Instagram at Kenya Claiborne. That is KinyaClaiborne. You can also find me at styleandsociety.com. I always say like something that's really underutilized is really utilizing social media as your Rolodex. Because even if mm-hmm. there's brands that you haven't worked with before that you're interested in working with, it's like oftentimes the contact is right there, like on the Instagram pages. And so,
oh, yeah. You know DM what I mean? Them. Like exactly. The person running mm-hmm. the social media is probably the person hiring the influencers.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
I always say that. So.
Yep.
Good advice. Thanks for coming on.
Thank
this was
you.
Great.
Thank you for having me.